This is Robin Collier of Cultural Energy, KCEI 90.1 FM. And we're in Santa Fe talking to Greg Mello, director of the Los Alamos Study Group, who has really focused on learning everything about how Los Alamos Nuclear Labs works and the whole issue of nuclear weapons around the world. And tell us about this amazing new nuclear weapons ban. This is not a reduction in nuclear weapons. It's a treaty signed by the people that don't have nuclear weapons, most of the countries in the world, saying that nuclear weapons are banned. Tell us what happened. When did it get through the United Nations, and what is the status of it?
Yes. So on September 20th, just last week, a treaty, it's called the Treaty for the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, was open for signature at the United Nations. And it makes the design, production, deployment, possession, use, threat of use, and so on of nuclear weapons illegal, and also any assistance in those acts. It also makes illegal for countries to station the nuclear weapons of other countries on their national territory. It also requires signing countries to develop national laws that would create criminal penalties that would apply to individuals that were involved in the nuclear weapons business, and a few other features. But that's the core of it. And this has been in development for the last, say, 7 years. And it started really by a group of doctors and the International Red Cross and Red Crescent. And then it was picked up by some leading countries, and people began to explore it. And there were conferences, first in Norway, then in Mexico, then in Austria. And the interest in a nuclear weapon prohibition treaty grew very rapidly in the diplomatic and foreign policy community around the world, because there's been no visible progress on nuclear disarmament under the Obama administration.
Well, explain going back. There was, decades ago, the agreement, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, where the people that had nuclear weapons signed and countries that didn't have nuclear weapons signed to say that they would stop the spread of nuclear weapons to new countries. And there were promises made in that treaty. Explain about that treaty.
The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is subscribed by something like 193 countries, practically almost everybody, not quite, Israel, India, Pakistan, North Korea.
Haven't signed, yeah.
Right. It was a deal, really. The nuclear weapons states would agree to negotiate disarmament. The non-nuclear weapon states agreed to never acquire nuclear weapons. And the nuclear weapon states, and really all states with nuclear technology, agreed to share the nuclear technology with other countries for peaceful purposes. So it was kind of an inheritor of Atoms for Peace.
Right.
And so, but that bargain has kind of fallen on hard times, because the nuclear weapon states haven't disarmed. And they keep making promises, and the promises keep being broken. And then there is the problem of Israel. And so all of these, these problems have created a lot of concern among some states which have traditionally seen themselves as peacemakers and have the capability and position in the world system of states to lead. States like Mexico and Ireland and Austria, Brazil, which had a nuclear weapons program. South Africa had nuclear weapons and got rid of them. And they have, in this subject, they have tremendous moral weight.
Right.
So,
And really, what's happening with North Korea or what was starting to happen with Iran, they negotiated a treaty to limit their nuclear advancement, is that these countries see that that the nuclear powers are never going to disarm. So why shouldn't we get nuclear weapons? You know, how can we be safe if the nuclear companies never keep their promises?
Right.
Explain exactly. that dilemma. You know, for the weaker countries in the world.
Sure.
Know.
Well, they recognize that they'll be in the fallout zone. They know that the effects of nuclear weapons aren't confined to the belligerent states. We now know about nuclear winter, and it's very severe. If a modest nuclear exchange were to occur, and cities attacked, cities are full of fuel, the enormous upward motion from in a mushroom cloud taking a large weapon, even a small weapon, burning cities, taking those that ash high in the atmosphere, it turns out that it doesn't rain out. It goes above the weather. And then the sun shining on the black particles makes them buoyant. And they float around the world, block the sun. And the temperature can drop depending on the amount of soot in the air, a few degrees, 2 degrees, 10 degrees. And even a couple of degrees is catastrophic for world agriculture. And it means, if you have a frost in the summertime, everything dies and billions of people die. And so the world, I think, is quite well apprised of this at this point. And although it's denied, it's not discussed in the United States. I know someone who asked the Nuclear Weapons Council, what about nuclear winter studies? Oh, we don't believe in those. But they definitely believe in them in all the scientific circles of the world and in the diplomatic community. And so they know that if there were a war between India and Pakistan, there would be a lot of starvation.
Yeah. So, we have this name-calling contest between Trump and the leader of North Korea. They're making these just outrageous statements of that they're going to destroy each other and... Right. North Korea saying that they're going to do an atmospheric test in the Pacific. They're shooting missiles over Japan. I mean, why hasn't the world done something about this crazy situation?
Yes.
And that's what really led to this, I guess. You know?
Yes, well, there are many possible nuclear flashpoints. And in the case of North Korea, of course, North Korea has made overtures through the years, which are and continuing. I can't say in the last couple of months, but they have said they would suspend their nuclear program if we suspended our joint military exercises with South Korea, which are designed to practice regime change and right. take over North Korea. And it seems reasonable to me. Returning to the overall situation. The people who put together the Ban Treaty, the diplomats, they are... the idea is to fill a legal gap and to create an international norm against the use of nuclear weapons that would gather steam as the number of countries signing the treaty increases. There's been an argument that some countries say, and we say, any use of nuclear weapons would automatically violate the laws of war because they cannot discriminate between civilians and military people. Their effects extend in space and time. They're disproportionate to any military objective and other laws which have been painstakingly put in place over the last 100 years that try to limit the evil of war. Nuclear weapons violate all that. Well, the nuclear weapon states disagree with that concept. And so there creates this, dispute. So one of the features of this ban treaty is to resolve that dispute. It's patently illegal to use a nuclear weapon henceforth, ever, or threaten with one.
And so the goal is to get as many non-nuclear weapon states to sign this, and you know, I guess it's advanced quite a bit already.
Yes.
And just create a shaming of the nuclear weapons yes. countries. Explain that's, that, sure. how that's been discussed among the
sure, that's, signatories. Sure, that's a part of it. It's a big part of it. So there's 53 countries have signed in the first 3 days.
Yeah.
And then three countries have ratified, which is important because after 50 ratifications, then the treaty goes formally into force. Uh-huh. And but then it will continue to grow. There is another effect of the treaty, which is not well understood because we don't like to talk about our far-flung empire and our network of alliances, and those are kind of taboo subjects in many circles. But this treaty affects that. The United States has, I'm being confused here a little bit, but I think it's 29 countries that we have promised to retaliate with nuclear weapons if they're attacked. And we're nobody else really has done this. So maybe Russia with Belarus or maybe yeah. not. But we have these extensive nuclear alliances. And NATO is, you know, the bulk of them. And then there's three in Southeast Asia. And so that's Australia, Japan, and South Korea, which is germane to your...
You're right.
Very germane to your question. The political pressure within some of those nuclear-dependent states could be quite significant and could affect the ability of the United States to station nuclear weapons there, to count on their support in nuclear threats, to count on their unquestioning support in conventional military expeditions, which implicitly have a nuclear backup or escalation control. So one of the reasons that we feel so confident that we can attack anyone around the world is because we can't lose, because we'll always be able to nuke someone as long as they don't have nuclear weapons. But it begins to erode the freedom of action for aggressive war, period.
Right.
So there's
a link. It affects beyond just the nuclear alliances.
Correct.
It affects the whole military alliance that we've constructed all around the world.
Yes. And so it feeds in with people that wonder, why is it that our country in Europe is being asked to spend enormous amounts of money to buy military equipment from the United States to be compatible with NATO when our people need money for schools and we're settling immigrants and we're doing this other stuff that we need money for. And it affects all of that. And it affects the willingness of the world to militarize its consciousness and security concept when we have climate change, we've got humanitarian crises that are destabilizing whole countries and whole regions. So it begins to feed into these other security questions and affects the whole security dialogue, we hope. And, yeah. But everything depends on civil society and on parliamentarians and on the willingness of governments to get off of one ship which is sinking and get on the other one that's floating.
So for the public, I mean, clearly the United States would not sign this at this point, I mean, with the political dynamics we have. But what can a citizen do to let people know about this or at least work to get our government to move closer to disarming? I mean, any effort to reduce the number of nuclear weapons would be very welcome.
Yes.
So what can they do?
They can write a letter to the editor, write an op-ed, go to our website. We have a BAN webpage, and go to the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons website. That's ICANW.org. And you can get all kinds of materials there. And begin to publicize this a little bit. It affects recruitment at our nuclear facilities, as you might imagine, because these activities are being stigmatized by an increasing number of countries. And why would a young person go to work in a facility to make weapons of mass destruction that have just been banned?
Right.
When we've got so many other important things to do.
So it's a real moral stand by a large part of the world. And so We've been talking to Greg Mello of the Los Alamos Study Group. Give again your website, and we've been talking about the nuclear weapons ban that was is just being adopted through the United Nations. 53 countries, you say, have signed already?
Yes.
Yeah. So people should keep track of this, and I think your website is a great way to track it.
So that website is lasg.org/ban. Mm-hmm. That will take you there. Or you can go to ICANW.org.
Okay.
That's the umbrella organization of about 400 organizations.
Great. So this is Rahm Collier of Cultural Energy, KCEI 90.1 FM.